Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota, and this past week we have been living a part of history that's been just about too much to bear for some of us. The death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police officers 1 week ago set off one of the most intense weeks Minnesota has ever endured. George Floyd, also known as Big Floyd, was a father, a brother, a partner, a friend to many. According to those closest to him, he was passionate about keeping the peace. His killing on the street at the corner of 38th and Chicago in Minneapolis blew the lid off of racial tension in our communities, our state, our country. Americans have expressed outrage at the murder of the 46-year-old father that was held down with an officer's knee for almost 10 minutes because of, allegedly, a counterfeit $20 bill. There have been protests on the streets of Minneapolis and St. Paul and other large cities, including Nashville, Denver, Los Angeles, Houston, and small communities, towns in northern Minnesota, Brainerd, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Grand Marais, Virginia, Hibbing, Duluth. The Justice for George rally in Bemidji drew hundreds of people and included speakers, music, prayer, and action steps. Chants of "Say his name, George Floyd," and "We can't breathe," and "Hands up, don't shoot." Those chants filled the air as protesters carried signs and walked from Pollen Babe north on Bemidji Avenue over to in front of the police station. My two guests today organized the security and the marshals at Saturday's event in Bemidji. Maggie is here. While at university, Maggie's bachelor's degree focused on critical studies of race and ethnicity theory with a minor in philosophy, concentrating on liberation movements and the effects of colonization. And Corey Medina, who many of you have heard right here on KAXC and KBXC, as part of the music group Corey Medina and Brothers. He's also here. He's a Navajo man. His motorcycle group, the Descendants, served and protected the rally goers in Bemidji on Saturday, and they've also been busy down in Minneapolis protecting and serving. Good morning, Maggie and Corey. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah.
1 week ago. 1 week ago right now, life was pretty much normal. George Floyd was still alive until Monday night. What, Corey, I'm going to start with you. You're a Navajo man. You're married to a Native woman as well. How does something like this, how did this affect you personally when you found out the news about George Floyd Monday night? What went through your mind?
Anybody would be heartbroken watching that. I hope everybody who could stomach it watched it. I'll be honest, when it first came out, I kind of had to skip through, you know. It was really hard to watch.
Yeah.
The life leave somebody, and I just couldn't help but think, because right now, like, in the world, it's kind of getting to the point where kids and a lot of people are really, I don't know, get into that death porn stuff and kind of, like, intentionally watch videos like that, and it was kind of becoming a form of entertainment. And then for something like that to happen, just really, it's sad to say, but really put things in place and put things in perspective of where we're at. And just watching that was just, it was kind of like a really big wake-up call. And it's just sad that George Floyd's life had to be used for that reason. But at the same time, I really feel, watching that, I already knew, like, all right, like, let's get ready, because something's going to break now, because this was tragic. And I think it was finally a breaking point in me where I realized, amongst millions out there, you would hope billions, but maybe millions out there, I knew there was a million hearts breaking at the same time. So, and it affected my family, and we just definitely felt for our brothers and sisters in the Black community, and especially for Minneapolis and George Floyd's family. Yeah. I think it was quite a bit.
It's shocking. It's still, I've only watched it one time. I can't watch it again.
Yeah.
But this is where we're at. And Maggie, you've been working in racial justice for a long, long time now. What was your reaction?
Well, my ears rang for about 36 hours straight, just tinnitus. which is a sign of high blood pressure and a trauma response. And I think a lot of things that happen when we watch that, like Corey called it murder porn, it is so hard because in many ways it's desensitizing, but it also escalates our reaction and it turns us into, kind of fight, flight, or freeze. So I cried and was mad, but mostly I could just feel my ears ringing and I couldn't stop hearing him say calls for his mom.
Yeah. Lots of issues are converging right now. Racial issues, authority issues, policy, brutality, human lives. Mm-hmm. And Okoriu, you said, you instantly thought things are going to mobilize, and that's what mm-hmm. I thought too. And Maggie, I'm sure you thought that as well. From your perspectives, I don't know which one of you wants to go first. What steps do you see as our steps to healing and growth from this? I mean, we're in this sort of space of just raw emotion right now across the whole country. What are the next steps? Before we'll talk about Bemidji Rally in a minute, but I want to focus on George for just a few moments.
Yeah. I think everybody out there can agree that those who do have Facebook, those who do have social media, that there's so much division right now, and you try to put so many answers out there that can... excuse me.
You're fine.
Please everybody, and you can't, and mm-hmm. and when it comes to issues like this, it's it's really hard because you're like, all right, what's the next step? We're tired of this. Let's change.
Right.
But it's hard mm-hmm. to get everybody on board, and it's hard to for everybody to feel the pain you do. And for everybody to feel the pain of the heartbreak of the people as well. It's really hard, and not everybody was raised to feel that way. Not everybody has the intuition, I guess, but
right.
I guess that's the biggest thing first is to, well, I don't know. Some would say, well, let's unite the people, and some would say they're either with us or they're against us. And if you're not with us, you're going to get left behind, So it's kind of one or two mentalities. But I think everyone out there needs to understand that those people who are going to move forward in this movement and in this change, people are just going to have to understand that, especially the youth, they're not going to wait for you. We as adults already failed our youth, mm-hmm. and they're done as well. So, and I feel like they're going to lead whatever this is. They're going to be in the thick of it. So,
yeah.
I think we just need to kind of get ready just to roll with it and roll with whatever's going to be happening in our communities. There's no fighting this, there's no fighting where it's going to go. We can't control it no matter what side you're on. So I would just say everybody just has to get themselves mentally and emotionally ready right now, because I don't know. I don't know what to do next.
Right.
Maggie might have a little better answer to that.
I don't think I have a better answer because there's so many unknowns, right? Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of what do we do next, right? I like to look back in order to look forward. And I think about when Rodney King and Latasha Harlan's beating and murder was filmed in 1992 in LA and the LA riots. And what it meant, and Maxine Waters' voice during that when she is quoted as saying, the fact of the matter is, whether we like it or not, riot is the voice that's unheard. And I think that the most important thing that I can do as a white woman and a mom and somebody who gives a lot of dangs about what's going on is listen to people who experience the most violence under the systems of white supremacy and capitalism and imperialism and patriarchy, and then to also put myself in between other white people and people who are grieving and feeling pain and feeling unheard. And so as a white woman, I try to be diligent in showing up for those conversations and especially because I think a lot of people for years have been saying, you know, it's not, there aren't that many racists, or it's not all bad. And I think what we're seeing in Minneapolis and the mobilization of white nationalists in order to create this added chaos shows us there is a lot. And they really are that bad. And then there are those of us who don't think we're racist, but don't really understand what it means to be under the influence of being in this society of white supremacy, as like the larger superstructure of the nation that we were built on, right? So I think about what it means to heal and confront the really scary things about our own selves and our family members, and challenge those first and foremost, always.
Yeah, I received a lot of emails and text messages over the weekend from, I'm from South Dakota, pretty limited as far as diversity. And I got a lot of emails and texts from people saying they were done. They were done being quiet. You know, they were going to start speaking up. And I guess for me, I thought, well, that's a step. That's a first step to stand up, like you just said, to people in your families or in your circles that are breaching that line of tolerance. So, well, you talked about getting to coming together in Bemidji. We did that on Saturday. Full disclosure, I was at the event. I stayed to the side. As both of you know, I've got people to protect. And so I was kind of off to the side of things, taking it all in. In Bemidji, I thought there was about 1,000 people there, but I'll say hundreds because I didn't really count. Tell us about the day. Did it meet your expectations? What did you think was going to happen, and what happened? Who wants to start, Corey?
As far as like expectations, I've been to a few. You know, I think a lot of us have been to a few of these events, and people who are listening are probably like, "Oh yeah, figures." You know, they go to these things. They live off that. But actually, I think to be honest, the last time I was really part of anything that really spoke against police brutality and racial hatred, I think I was maybe like ninth grade, I think, or even eighth grade. I went out with my mom, and it was funny because back then, kind of before this political era, you know, when everybody came out, it wasn't the right or the left, you know, and thankfully it was all just Navajos anyway majority white town. And, you know, we walked down their biggest hill that they have and blocked off a street. And, but anyways, that was my last experience, and it's been quite a while since I really, been a part of anything that huge. My views have changed over the past, well, since moving to Minnesota, y'all messed me up. So my views have changed dramatically. And even my friends who kind of knew me before I moved, and my friends who knew me when I first moved here, you know, I'm sure they can all attest to that, you know, I kind of speak for certain things a little more than others these days. And I'm okay with that. But anyways, it blew up my expectations. We were set to be there right at 2 with the rest of the volunteer marshals. And, you know, so I figured maybe, you know, all right, people probably start filing in maybe 2:20, 2:30. But sure enough, we got there to meet up with the actual, like, staff of the event, and there was already so many people there. Like there was already hundreds there before 2 o'clock. And so it was pretty overwhelming as I get there, and someone who's going to actually be part of like just helping keep the peace, my heart started beating a little bit. You know, because I'm kind of used to big events. I'm used to my town has one of the biggest parades on our reservation. And I've been in probably about 20 of them, all through my childhood and life. I don't know why, but I'm used to seeing adults just scream for certain different things to get people to move and get people, you know, I've seen mad adults, frustrated adults, the ones that don't care, the ones that are really nice. Definitely not as serious as this, but that's just kind of what I'm used to seeing. So right away, just kind of my parade instincts kind of came in, you know, because we're all coming into this from all walks of life,
right?
You know, and you know, so everyone's feelings, everyone's experience with this was different. You know, some people like Maggie and DJ Dang, you know, people like them who you know, Jess and man, they've been doing this for a long time as far as using their body and their voice and even their ethnic background to help be a voice for the voiceless. And,
right.
And it's, and, but anyways, you know, so everyone's, and I see everyone coming in and I think that was the coolest thing for me is that everyone was walking up. It was like, it wasn't, because I pictured it to be something kind of like where we just kind of just stand there with a few people and just let people kind of hate on us, either hate on us or love on us. That's kind of really what I.
You didn't think the support would be that huge.
No, to be honest, I'm to be as transparent as I can be, you know, and keep in mind that I'm very involved in my life with the surrounding tribes in Bemidji, you know, me being Navajo Native myself. You know, so there's a lot of perspectives out there that I hear and I feel about Bemidji with racism and things like that. So just hearing how much hurt is out there within this community, my expectation was just going to be like, all right, we're going to stand out there and we're just going to kind of take the hate and hopefully we get a few people who are in support of us. And that was really just my expectation. I was just like, man, I just hope, you know, Bemidji can handle this. So, yeah. And I walk up and man, it's like, everyone's like, dope. Like, where do we sit? Where do we stand? Like just, it was amazing. And it was like kids, adults. And I can honestly say, man, like a good 90 to 95% of everybody there were wearing masks.
Yeah,
and if somebody wasn't wearing a mask, you know, someone would always try to just kind of politely ask me if they'd like one or if they'd like somebody to get them one, and everyone was really cool. So for me, that was just kind of one of the parts where I realized, like, okay, like I'd need to get myself kind of ready for this, and that was just pretty cool just seeing all the different walks of life come in and just realize, like, okay, wow. I was just really blown away and shocked. We couldn't have really asked for anything better. So
yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the masks. I noticed the same thing, and I thought, wow, if there's no better right now in our current state of affairs, no better symbol of a group of people who actually care for other people than this mass of hundreds and hundreds of all different kinds of humans, backgrounds, colors. The whole gamut, over 90% of them wearing a mask. I mean, clearly these people care about other human beings. It was an outward symbol of that, and it was just a day of kindness and love and solidarity, and justice for George Floyd. Yeah. Maggie, you've been to lots of things like this over your life. What did you think of this one, and what do you think? What do you think it means to Bemidji to have had this kind of a turnout?
It exceeded my expectations. Are you getting radio feedback? Okay. It exceeded my expectations in the number of people. It came together so fast, and the organizers from Our Revolution and Faye from, I can't remember the name of her group, but it's a scout group that looks for missing people in the Leech Lake area. But they really pulled this together so quickly and so beautifully, and I too was not prepared for the amount of people that were there, and I was prepared to be outnumbered by people who wished we weren't there, and that was just simply not the case. And so my heart kind of stuttered around in my body, and then was just filled with love and appreciation for this community that I am new-ish to. The turnout was beautiful. It was painful asking people that I knew, how are you? And then feeling like, no, never mind. We know we're not okay. That's why we're here, but we're here together. I was amazed by how well, you know, the MC helped us cross the street, and I was amazed by people's collective desire to show up and support each other. And the masks, like you said, I love that people were wearing masks. I think people should wear masks to most protests. And I believe that this in Bemidji was truly astonishing. And I had shown up at when Hardell Sherrill died in Beltrami County Jail in 2018. I showed up after getting that information, and I was there with just Tony May's family, pretty much just Tony May's family, and then myself and my son. And we were standing outside of the precinct. And so I think about how much has shifted and how many more people are joining the conversation. I had a coworker who was a young white man admit to me that 2 weeks ago he would have, you know, scoffed and said, no, this is, protests should, don't need to happen. And then after he showed up on Saturday, he wrote a beautiful post about how it was the most amazing thing he's ever seen. And he went back to work and was just giddy with how much had shifted inside of him just from seeing what it actually looks like, because the protests in the Twin Cities and all these other places across the world in the last, 33 years or however long, and hundreds of years, get a lot of bad rap because we're supposed to be quiet and just follow the rules. And so when people have just accepted that dominant narrative that we shouldn't stand up to what we perceive in our hearts and in our souls as being wrong and unjust, that we can change people's minds when they show up, and we show up with such a collective community of care. Yeah. And beautiful sayings. And I think about Vernon May, who is here in Bemidji, because we're talking about George Floyd here now this week, but it isn't just in Minneapolis. And the breakdown of that is every time we just get more and more used to it and we accept the dominant narrative and we have authority or our parents or our uncles saying, wait for the official narrative to come out, let the police investigate. And I keep thinking about Bob Kroll and the fact that he is a known member of white supremacist groups, or historically had been. And he's the Union Federation Police Union. I can't remember the name, but he's the president of it.
Minnesota Union.
Federation. Thank you. So we're looking to these people to investigate themselves. And I don't think all police officers are bad people, but I don't trust a system that gets to walk around with authority and hurt people with impunity and, supposedly give people permission to patrol other white groups with guns to patrol our Bemidji streets after curfew.
Yeah, we saw that citizens. This weekend on Facebook here in Bemidji.
Yeah, and I don't think, I think they asked and were told no, but I think they were also told, can't say yes, but could use you sort of a situation because of the post from the off-grid armory. And so I challenge the idea that we should wait for the official narrative. And I think that we should go deeper and listen to the narratives that our hearts are saying. And it's really hard to watch that video of George Floyd and not see the symbolism of that white cop, that Chauvin, kneeling on his neck.
Right.
And what that means, because people have been saying, Colin Kaepernick is disgracing the flag when he kneels for the national anthem. But in reality, kneeling is mourning. It's honor, right? And for us, it was until Derek Chauvin did it on George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And when one of the bystanders said, "It looks like you're enjoying this," he got this flash in his eyes, and it looked like he kneeled harder. Because I couldn't watch the life be sucked out of George Floyd, but I wanted to watch what it looked like when that man killed him. Because sometimes I think, of course, police officers are trained to feel fear for their lives. But with his hands in his pockets and that look in his eyes, I know that he was not afraid. And it was shocking to have that image in my mind.
Where do we go from here, you guys? I know we kind of have to wrap it up, but this is a conversation I think we need to keep having intermittently as we go forward. But where do we go from here? We're still mourning. We're still aching, actually. But what next?
I think about prescribed fires and what it means to clear the land in order to let new growth and beautiful things come up from our mother and from the earth. And I really hope that we listen to the youth.
Mm-hmm. Corey?
I can only speak for the community that I live in and I pay taxes for and things like that. But in my opinion, what next? I think and I know that every community has had fires for generations that have not been put out and that have just been abandoned and just left to burn. And we hope and pray from a distance that it'll go out on its own. Every community has had that. So now when this new fire comes in, everyone's just got to realize and process that much faster the difference between vandalism and revival. You got to know the difference, you know, and everyone's going to start posting it. In every community, things are going to start happening. And we just need to remember that there were already fires going before this new big flame came in. And so now we're at a point where communities are scared, and any negative thing that happens, it's going to get lumped up with this huge flame. But just remember, please, no matter what side you're on, process as fast as you can the difference. And as soon as you realize the difference between this isn't part of the movement or this is part of the movement towards change, the sooner you realize it, right away, start helping your friends realize it, who I wouldn't say who are slow at it, but who just kind of may have some things they're dealing with to kind of block that perspective. So,
right.
And I don't know, we say what's next, and you know, we're on social media, we're watching TV, but man, what's next is like the person next to us, the house next to us, the street next to us. What's next is our towns, we've been so focused and enamored with everywhere else, vacations, Hollywood, whatever. I want to go travel and whatever. But it's like, man, we're not even focusing on our own homes and our own communities and the own hurts here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're so preoccupied with everyone else's hurt when we're not even preoccupying ourselves with the hurt of our neighbor. And I feel like that's what's next, is we need to just realize there's hurting people everywhere, no matter what side they're on, no matter who they voted for. We all have baggage that we're carrying, some more than others. And I think we just need to tend to the flames that are already in our community and just realize the difference between those fires.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, guys. It starts right at the kitchen table.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today. It's a conversation that can go, that needs to keep happening and will keep happening here at Northern Community Radio. The news around this is constantly developing, and we're going to keep following it here at the station. So thank you, Maggie and
Corey.
Thank you,
Katie.
Yeah.
Thank you, Katie.
Yeah.
We appreciate you guys. Thank you, Maggie. Thanks for using your platform and everyone who's listening and supporting us. And I would just say, everyone who's listening and who do support this, man, please just help people understand, you know, this is a positive thing, and just help people understand that everyone who is for change, we're not against the community, we're for the community.
Yeah.
Protect the kids, right?
Yeah.
Black, brown, trans, gay, all of them.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Area Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.